So I'm glad you're back. Thanks for coming back. We're going to finish our Doctrine of Heaven part today. The notes are should be coming around, so if you haven't gotten those, they're somewhere over here. Last week I handed out two handouts. One was the Doctrine of Heaven part two, and one was how to respond to the claims of heaven tourism. And I just ran out of that handout. So if you would like the heaven tourism, how to respond to heaven is for real and those kinds of things, if you'd like that and didn't get it, come see me and I'll email it to you sometime this week. I do have a few extra copies of the Doctrine of Heaven Part 2, which I handed out last week, and those are right here. Because this is our last Sunday, we're not going to get through Part 2 and Part 3. We just don't have enough time to do both of those. So what I'm going to do is I want to work through Part 3 today, and I'll let you read the notes on Part 2 on your own, because it's basically a summary of the series that we did back in September on the intermediate heaven. Remember when we did that series on what worship in heaven is like? I took those messages and condensed them down into these notes. And so that's what part two is. So I'll let you study that on your own. And then we're going to go through part three today. So just to differentiate between those two, there are two different kinds of heaven, if you will. There's an intermediate heaven. This is the top of part three. So there's an intermediate heaven, a temporary heaven, a present heaven. That's the place we go to when we die. We will go there in our spirits. Our body stays in the grave. So if you died today and you're in the Lord, you would immediately be in the intermediate heaven. And that's what's described in Revelation 4 and 5. That's what Paul says when he says to be absent from the body is to be at home with the Lord. That's what he's talking about, that intermediate heaven. But that's not our final destination. That's not the final heaven. That's not the place that we will live forever in. And so what we want to talk about today is that final heaven, the new heavens and the new earth. And so right now, heaven and earth are separated. Heaven is up there. Earth is down here. They're not the same domain. They're separated. And yet there's coming a day when heaven and earth will be joined, when they'll be merged, and heaven will be here on earth. And that's our final place. That's the new heavens and the new earth, the eternal state. And it's that part of heaven that we want to deal with today. If you look on page one of your notes in the middle there, this eternal heaven has always been the hope of the redeemed. So if you look in Isaiah 65, it says, "Behold, I create a new heaven and a new earth, and the former things will not be remembered or come to mind." So there's, even back in Isaiah, there was this hope, this expectation of a new heaven and a new earth. Isaiah 66, "Just as the new heavens and new earth, which I make, will endure before me, declares the Lord, so your offspring and your name will endure." So there's this expectation, even in the Old Testament, of this place called the new heavens and the new earth. When we come to the New Testament, particularly Hebrews 11 and 13, we find that those who lived in the Old Testament shared this expectation. Hebrews 11, verses 9 and 10, "By faith he," Abraham, "lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise, for he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God." He's looking for a city, a real city with real foundations, that is heaven. That's the eternal state. That's not the intermediate heaven. He's talking there about an eternal heaven. Hebrews 11, 16, "But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their father or God, because he has prepared a city for them." So here, the eternal state's called a country and a city. So these are references to the eternal state. Hebrews 13, 14, "For here we do not have a lasting city, but we are seeking the city which is to come." So these are descriptions or references to the hope of a coming eternal state, known as a heavenly country or a heavenly city. And this is what we want to spend most of our time talking about this morning. So turn in your Bibles to Revelation 21 and 22, because there is where this eternal state is described, and we want to confine most of our discussion to these two chapters this morning. And what I did is I just put together these notes in a way that summarizes what this new heaven and new earth is going to be like. So if you look on the bottom of page one, the first thing we need to note about this new heaven and new earth is that it is a new heaven and a new earth. It's not the same heaven and the same earth. It's a new heaven and a new earth. So look at Revelation 21:1. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there's no longer any sea. So John describes here how the first heaven and the first earth passed away, how this present heaven and the present earth that we know will eventually pass away. Now hold your finger here and go over to the book of 2 Peter, because Peter describes how this is going to take place. So if you've ever wondered how this is going to happen, Peter tells us, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Can someone read verse 7? Terry, want to read it?
By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and destruction of ungodly men.
Okay. So, look at verse 6, the verse before that, that Terry just read, through which the world at that time was destroyed, being flooded with water. So he's talking about a time when God at one time destroyed the present earth with water. And then verse 7 says there's going to come a day when this present earth is going to be destroyed again, this time by fire. So first destruction by flood, second destruction by fire. If you go down to verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. And then down in verse 12, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, on account of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning, and the elements will melt with intense heat. So all three of these verses tell us how it's going to happen. There's going to be some sort of supernatural fire that actually destroys the present earth. Some say this is going to be a nuclear explosion, with the proliferation of nuclear weapons, but this is going to be way bigger than any nuclear explosion that man can create. This is going to be an undoing of the whole atomic structure of the universe, and that's what's going to probably happen at that moment. God's going to undo creation by having it just tear apart.
That would be my question, by the Earth being destroyed, which affects the solar system, so the whole universe will be destroyed, or just a small portion of it?
It says present heaven and earth. Now, does the heaven mean the universe or just the earth? I mean, my assumption is that the entire universe, that it's a renovation of the present universe. If you turn to page 2, I think that's kind of what we say here. This will be a meltdown of universal proportions when the elements burn with fervent heat. Everything we know will be instantly burned up. But it won't be a complete annihilation of what God created. It will most likely be a renewal of it, a temporary destruction that is reserved through, is reversed through resurrection and restoration. So this is most likely going to be a restoration of the present universe through fire, and the end result will be a new heaven and a new earth. Wendy.
Just to define restoration, because I think of restoring an old chair, you still have the basic chair and you're just doing something to it to kind of renovate it. And it sounds to me like this is a complete destruction of all the old, and it is a brand new creating of all the new. So
yeah.
When you use the word restore, it kind of is almost like...
Yeah, there's different theories as to what this means. Is this a complete annihilation and total removal of the present matter in the current universe? That's one theory. The other theory is it's such a fiery destruction that it destroys it, but God then reworks it into a new heaven and new earth. And those are two different possibilities. I prefer probably the latter one, because he's in the process of resurrecting. He gives our bodies a resurrected body. He doesn't take something that didn't exist and make a new body out of it. He takes our current body and he restores it to its glorified state, or makes it into a glorified state. And so there's a parallel maybe there between that and what he does in the universe, that he restores it through resurrection. Michael?
Is the restoration maybe more towards bringing back what was pre-sin time, and so that, you know, our bodies are going to be similar to what they are now,
yeah,
you know, but yet without sin and without defect, and then what's around and what we see in the earth and heavens, plants, you know, will be back, and
yes,
trees will be restored to,
yes,
to more what it was pre-sin.
Yep, I think we could go back to an Edenic look at what Eden was like, and perhaps that's a picture of what the new heavens and the new earth will be like, a restored heaven and earth, kind of like it was in the Garden of Eden.
But our bodies are not going to be based on the blood oxygen system.
Well, possibly. We have resurrected bodies, right? Christ, when he was resurrected in his glorified body, he breathed air, he drank water, he ate fish. So I think there's going to be much more continuity between our earthly bodies than maybe we imagine. Now, it's distinct. It's different. He passed through walls, too. Right? I mean, that's a little, we can't really relate to that part of it. It'd be kind of fun, right?
He was transported from one side of the lake to the other.
Exactly. Oh, my boys would love that. They would have so much fun with that. So there's a continuity with this glorified body, but there's a discontinuity as well. And the continuity is, it's going to be like this. It's going to have flesh, blood, breathe air, eat food, all of that. But it's going to have properties and qualities distinctly different than what our current bodies have as well. Agree? Disagree? Anybody?
Okay. The one thing you'd see, I like what you said about moving from the physical body to the resurrected body and the similarities and how we get Christ's body as an example. The one argument I could see for the other side, I'm not saying that this would be compelling, but there was no longer any sea. So that was not restored.
Correct. However, there's water. So if you go to Revelation 22, verse 1, there's water. So the question is, yeah, good question, Ken, is what is the sea? Is he referring to there's actually no, physically no sea, there's no ocean, there's no bodies of water? Is that what he means? Or does he mean that there's no destructive sea that kills people and drowns ships? And so that's a different opinion. Clearly there's water in the eternal state. We see that.
They were plumbing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, depending on what you buy into that theory or not, too, at one time all the continents supposedly were one mass of land. That could mean that if it goes back to its original restoration, that all land is reconnected.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just an idea popped in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would lean to the fact that, and there's no longer any sea. I mean, if you just take that point blank, it sounds like there's no ocean. There's no bodies of water. But clearly there's water there, so could there be a reference here to that it's a sea that isn't destructive in its capacity? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, wasn't the sea in that the time of the New Testament sort of a, you know, still mostly unknown and very treacherous.
Yes.
And sort of a source of commerce, but mostly an obstacle.
Yes. An obstacle to be crossed, a place where you died if you weren't careful. So.
It also separated people from each other. And I mean, I view that too, that there's nothing going to keep us from others.
Exactly. Yep. Let's look at the.
If there's any blood, I mean, you know, why blood in the new body? You know, it's like the thing on this world that causes so much pain and grief, and it's the.
But there's none of that there. There's no pain. There's no suffering. There's no wounds. There's no death. So
why would there be a need for blood? But I won't even know that now. I'm gonna.
Well, it's like, you know, it's the loss of blood that's the problem. You know, it's like, it's not the fall that hurts, it's the sudden stop.
It's true. It's true.
So yeah. We can.
But we wouldn't be breathing oxygen up in heaven. I just can't imagine that we need oxygen and, you know, need the system that carries out the toxins from our body. And I just, for some reason, I just don't believe we're going
to
have blood. But.
Well, we have to go back to the way, what did God design from the beginning? God created Adam and Eve like this. Just perfect. And he designed them to live eternally. So God designed these bodies to live eternally on this earth in this capacity, not subject to sin, not subject to death, not subject to decay, not subject to disease. But he designed these bodies this way to function and live on this earth forever, right? That's why That's why God kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden, lest they eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or the knowledge of life, or the tree of life, and they live forever in that state of being separated from God. So He created these bodies for eternity. So I personally,
I get Eve to have babies and to, you know, for people to eat food and get rid of that food, and I just can't imagine.
Well, yeah, that gets into all our questions of, do you eliminate the waste in heaven? I mean, certainly. Those are questions that perhaps we can't answer.
I think we need to trust that God will do it right.
He'll figure that out, right. It'll be heavenly porta-potties or something.
Interesting things to ponder on. But beyond pondering, there's little that we can do other than read. And hopefully, the Holy Spirit will give us what knowledge we need.
Right.
But just the knowledge that God's going to take care of it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yep, absolutely.
Be happy. Don't worry.
Isn't there a song about that?
Just don't worry about the body of the parent.
Yeah.
Does your knowledge, though, break down a little bit in the sense of Adam and Eve? Because that was the created bodies like we have, but that's not the same as the resurrection body?
That's a good question. So is the body that Adam and Eve were created with the same as the resurrection body? Perhaps there's a difference there. Perhaps there's a distinction there. There's probably some truth to that.
But yet the sinless state that Adam and Eve was in would be comparable to the new heaven and new earth.
Correct.
But the bodies, though, would be different. There would be differentiation there.
Yeah, the question is how, though?
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be very similar.
But they needed to eat and do all those things that one is all about just to survive. I mean, they couldn't have done that without that.
Right.
That probably wouldn't be the same.
Now the question is, did Christ have to eat in his resurrected body?
He did.
I don't think he had to. He chose to, and he enjoyed to. And certainly we're going to see this tree of life and this river of life that I think we get to drink from and we get to eat from, but does not... We don't have to necessarily do that for sustenance. So I think there may be a distinction there.
We're just handicapped in that. The only thing we can think of is what we know in our current state. And it's just going to be so totally different and distinct.
Exactly. It's hard to know
when we're there.
Yep.
Todd, the human body was the crowning touch of all of God's creation.
That's right.
And we were made in His image. Doesn't mean He has hands and feet and all that, but all the characteristics of a spirit and the knowledge and memory and, you know, those intrinsic things, that's the highest point of His creation.
That's right.
The crowning touch of it. And if you look at the physiology of the human body, like the oxygen, when He was talking about the blood,
yeah.
I mean, those are crowning touches of a created knowledge.
That's right.
Of God. So maybe that will continue to give glory to Him.
Yeah, somehow that has to continue. I think you see that continue with Christ's glorified body. He's not a different, he didn't have a drastically different body. He had a body that was
recognizable
and, you know,
still
had the wounds in the side and the hands, and he ate and all those things. So I think there's more continuity than perhaps we can imagine. And that goes along with our second point on page two. It's similar. This new heaven, this new earth is very similar to the present earth. And so, since John calls this the new heaven and the new earth, there must be some continuity and similarity between the present heaven and earth and the new heaven and earth. And so, there, I think you see that here even in this verse. First, he calls the new heaven with a city. If you look down in verse 2 of Revelation 21, I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. So, he calls this the new earth and a new city, and you think about, what do you do in a city? We're familiar with a city. Well, there's a city in heaven. There's an eternal city. And if you think about it, cities have streets and houses and buildings and parks and stores and culture and music and art and athletics and events and restaurants and people engaged in all kinds of activities. There's bustling nature in a city. And we think about what you can do in Grand Rapids, right? I listed a bunch of things there. You can take a kayak down a river. You can go to a Whitecaps game. You can go to a concert. You can walk in Riverside Park. You can listen to the symphony. You can eat at a festival. You can smell the beautiful flowers in Meyer Gardens. You can go for a hike. You can bike ride the White Pine Trail. You can eat at restaurants. These are all things that you can do in a city. Well, I think that because God calls heaven, the eternal heaven, a city, there's going to be continuity there. So if we think about heaven as some place you sit on a cloud and you play your harp all day, that's not the heaven I want to be a part of. I like kayaking and I like bike riding and, you know, and hiking, and I think you're going to see a lot of that stuff because he calls it an earth and a city. We're familiar with those terms. I don't think he's just using those terms because those are the only terms we know. I think there's going to be a continuity between those things. So if you look down here, life on the new earth will center around a new city, the New Jerusalem, much like it does today. A quote by MacArthur, the concept of a city includes relationships, activity, responsibility, unity, socialization, communion, cooperation. Unlike the evil cities of the present earth, the perfectly holy people in the New Jerusalem will live and work together in perfect harmony. So imagine a perfect city where people stop at stoplights and there's a perfect government and there's no speeding and there's, you know, that's what heaven's going to be like. It's a city. And the second thing is, it's referred to as a country. We'd read some of those verses earlier about heaven being a country. Well, we're familiar with country. We know countries are ruled by leaders and they have territories and they have laws and they have land. And so we're familiar with these terms, country and cities. And so there's continuity here. Thirdly, heaven has much of the natural beauty that we have on earth. If you look in these verses here, there's a mountain in heaven, Revelation 21, verse 10. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain. Revelation 22, verse 1 says there's a river and there's water. Revelation 22, verse 2 says there's fruit trees with all kinds of fruit coming from them. So he's talking here about a place that we're familiar with. We're familiar with earth. We know what mountains look like. We know what rivers look like and trees look like. And so if you want to know what our eternal home is going to look like, in a sense, you look around. In a sense, you look at the current earth. In a sense, you see what's around us. And a lot of what we see on this earth currently is what we're going to see in heaven as well. Top of page 3, Alcorn says it well. He says, the biblical doctrine of the new earth implies something startling, that if we want to know what the ultimate heaven, our eternal home, will be like, the best place to start is by looking around us. We shouldn't close our eyes and try to imagine the unimaginable. We should open our eyes, because the present earth is as much a valid reference point for envisioning the new earth as our present bodies are a valid reference point for envisioning our new bodies. We just talked about that. After all, we're living on the remnants of a perfect world as the remnants of a perfect humanity. Agree with that or not?
What do you do with no mind is no eyes have seen, no ears have heard, no mind can conceive what God has prepared for those who love Him? How do you harmonize that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's going to be what we see now, that much better, that much more wonderful. I mean, we're going to go on and look at the description of the heavenly city, streets of gold and pearl, gates of pearls, and those kinds of things. There's a description that none of us can fully relate to. So it is far superior than what we can imagine.
I don't want to jump the gun, but what do you do with, how do you harmonize verse 5? I'm making all things new, or everything new. Death could be a key verse for universalists. Yes?
It could be, but it's not.
I know, but... You know what I'm saying?
How everything is ultimately restored.
Right.
And everyone's restored to God and...
You're right. That's the argument that could be used from that verse. How would you harmonize that or counter that?
Yeah, I would say that's not the point of the text. He's not talking about salvation. He's not talking about redemption. He's talking about a new earth, a new heaven, which is entirely renovated in a magnificent way that we've never seen on this earth.
But at that point, when he says that, already everybody's thrown into the lake of fire that don't go to heaven.
Correct. Yeah, look at the last verse.
Say, at that point, that everybody who's going to be there is made new, and all the people are already gone.
Yeah, look at verse end of verse chapter 20, verse 15.
Right.
If anyone's name is not found written in the book of the life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. So all those who have not known the Lord, who have rejected him, have already been banished to the lake of fire. So it's impossible for this to be a reference to universalism. That's how I would. Yeah. Yeah, Shiloh?
What about Revelation 22, verse 5, there'll be one more night and they will not need the light of the lamp and the light of the sun. So that, I guess that's kind of a drastic difference. Then.
Okay.
You won't even have the sun.
Yeah. Well,
so how could it be just a renovation of the whole universe? Because that would be a universe without the sun.
Good question. Read it carefully, though. It doesn't say there is no sun. it says they have no need of the sun. So it doesn't actually say that there is not a sun there. It says they have no need of the light of a lamp nor the light of a sun. So if we, and I wrestled with this too a while ago. I used to think, well, yeah, there's no sun in heaven. And then I thought, no, it doesn't say that. It just says you don't need the light of the sun. It doesn't say there is no sun. There is not a sun. And the point is, it's the glory of God that's going to illuminate the heavens and the earth. And so the brightness of the glory of God is going to outshine the brightness of any sun that we're familiar with. Terry?
In the intermediate hymn that you referred to, you know, and did your sermon series on, you described in detail all the glory around the throne of God and all this, and I think in the new hymn, will that, obviously, I mean, that would still exist, I would think, but, I mean, is there like a single place of that, or do the everyone still worship? I mean, you've got all this regular, quote, regular life going on, but you still have the, you know, the emphasis
yes.
on God's glory, I guess.
They're merged at that point. The new heavens and new earth merges. The intermediate heaven and the new earth, they're merged together into one entity upon the earth. So the throne room of God is upon the earth. So what we've seen in Revelation 4 or 5 as it relates to the glory and the splendor and the majesty of heaven and the throne room, that's now upon the earth.
So we're not like permanently 100% of the time at the feet of God, so to worship, if we're doing all these other activities too?
Yeah, correct. I mean, we're going to look at nations come and go. Look at 21:24. The nations shall walk by its light, and the kings of earth shall bring their glory into it, into the city. There's a city on the earth, the New Jerusalem. People come in and out of that city. So, which implies that there's people living outside the city in other places. So, again, I think that's similar to what we see on earth today. There's people living in other parts of the world, and there's going to be a capital city in the new heaven and new earth, but there's nations that come in and out of that city. So, again, we're straining at something that's hard for us to comprehend. Okay, I admit that. I don't have all the answers here, but it's going to be more on the earth, Terry. We're not going to be in heaven in the clouds or in the air. We're going to be on the earth with Christ.
Yeah. I guess what I'm kind of throwing here is the idea that I've always just imagined we'll be so intently, our emphasis so intently upon worshiping God and praising God that I never even gave thought that we'd be doing other activities, because it seems like somehow then we're pulled away from God, although we realize God's in all that. But
yeah, well, there will be other activities. There will be many other things that we engage in. We're not just at his feet worshiping him the whole time, but it's that everything that we do will be an act of worship.
And then we have to remember that time is an element.
Yes.
So that changes
yep.
everything too.
Correct.
And you saying all this, aren't you trying to imagine the unimaginable?
Well, you know, what is the contrast though? If you don't at least struggle with this, you get lazy and say consummation.
Yeah.
All right, and then what does that do for us?
Yeah.
Better struggle with the uncertainty.
Yeah, it's better to struggle with this and try and figure this out and wrestle with what these texts say than just to say, well, it's all going to end in the end and it'll all work out. And no, there are clear words here that he wants us to understand. He wants us to understand different entities related to this new heaven and new earth, and that's why he's given it to us, and we need to wrestle with it.
Come back to Shiloh's point, when God created the first day, he separated light from darkness,
yeah.
and at the end of it, he called it a day.
Yeah.
So there was light there, and he didn't make the sun, moon, and stars until day four.
Exactly.
And he called that a day. So
exactly.
There was a light present
yep.
without the sun or the stars.
Exactly. There was 3 days of creation with light.
With light present on a daily, day and night process.
Before a sun ever existed.
24 hour days.
Exactly.
But how did you have a night then if the glory of God was there?
I don't know, Dale. Don't ask me these things.
There is no rotation.
You're an elder. You're supposed to know that.
Ordained elder.
I don't know. I mean, it must be there's a daily cycle, right? There's a 24-hour cycle, and I guess you can have a day and a night without a sun, which is clearly the case. Yeah, it's spinning.
24 hours.
Right.
24 hours. Sun's over here.
Right. Well, light was over there.
Like a sword.
Wendy?
Just to let y'all know, John MacArthur has some pretty good sermons, I've noticed. I'm kind of looking up here because I'm going to do some more research because it's bugging me about the blood thing. So, I mean, there's one particularly called, and I haven't read it yet, Our Resurrected Bodies, or Our Resurrection Bodies, that looks pretty interesting. Just to let y'all know. GTY.org, Our Resurrected Bodies.
Commercial. All right, we've got to wrap this up. Well, we've got to keep going. Chapter, page 3, it's been prepared for us. This heaven has been prepared for us. Again, back at chapter 21, verse 2, I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having been made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. So he says that this new city, this new Jerusalem, has been made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. So this must mean that this holy city, this new Jerusalem, comes down. The assumption is here, it comes all the way down to meet the earth. Okay, some have said it just hovers in the air. Maybe you've heard some people say that this new Jerusalem hovers in the air above the earth. But it doesn't say that. It actually just says it comes down. The assumption is it comes all the way down to earth, where earth and heaven are joined and eternally bound together. So that's one part. The other part of this we need to know is that it was made ready, which implies that the New Jerusalem has already been prepared for the creation of the new heavens and the new earth. So this New Jerusalem is being prepared currently in heaven for us. Who prepared it for us? I think perhaps John 14 is a help here. Jesus said, "If I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself." Perhaps Jesus is preparing the new Jerusalem, the new heavens, the new earth for us now. And if that's the case, think how splendid and magnificent it will be if he's been doing this now for 2,000 years. Right? So it's been made ready. It's been prepared for us. And there's a day coming when this new Jerusalem will be joined with the present earth or the new earth, and they will become one. So it's been prepared for us. Okay. Thirdly, it's where God dwells. Verse 3, chapter 21, I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them." We talked about this a little bit last week, that the central reality of heaven is God, not the city, not the streets of gold, not the pearls, the gates of pearl, not all the wonderful things. The central focus of heaven is God. And that's what his point here is, that we will behold the tabernacle of God, which will be among us, and he will be among us, and we will be with him. And so heaven and earth will be brought together so that God's home becomes our home and our home becomes his home. So right now they're separated, right? This is kind of our home. Physically, God is in heaven, that's his home, but one day that these are going to be merged, where our heaven, our home is his home, and vice versa. And so that's the joy that we have to look forward to in heaven. Top of page 4, that God's ultimate plan is not to take us to live in a realm made for him, but to come down and live with us in a realm that he made for us. So God will dwell with us. He will come and live on the earth with us. So while the present heaven is up there, the future eternal heaven is down here, where we will dwell together with God. And that's the staggering reality of heaven, is that we will be in God's presence for all eternity. That's what makes heaven that much more wonderful. Okay. Fourthly, it's a place of joy and perfection, where he wipes away every tear from their eye. No longer death, mourning, crying, pain. The first things have passed away. And those first things refer to this present earth, this present heaven, okay, the current earth as we know it today. Those are the first things that will have passed away, and everything associated with it, like death and crying and mourning, that's all gone. Okay. Fifthly, and this is where we want to spend a few minutes before we have to break, is that it has a spectacular capital city. And if you look in chapter 21, verse 10, let me just read these verses, because they're really splendid. Look at verse 10. He carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. And it had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates were 12 angels, and the names were written on them, which are those of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. there were three gates on the east and three on the north and three on the south and three gates on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And the one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. And in the city was laid out as a square, and its length is as great as a width. And he measured the city with a rod 1,500 miles. Its length, its width, and its height are equal. And he measured its walls 72 yards according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements. And the material was of the wall was jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass. The foundation stones of the wall were adorned with every kind of precious stones. The first foundation stone was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each one of the gates was a single pearl, and the streets of city was pure gold, like translucent or transparent glass. So here's a description of the heavenly city, the new capital city of new heavens and new earth. I'm not a big city fan. I would much rather be out in the country. I would be out in the mountains, away from everybody, camping with a tent or a camper. That's where I'd rather be. But there's something unique about a city, right? There's something fun about a city. There's restaurants, and you can go there, and there's something spectacular about a city and its architecture and its lights. And that's kind of how John describes this city, as a spectacular place. And you can see here that there's gates, or there's walls, and there's gates, and these gates are made of pearls, and they're a single pearl. So imagine that, a single pearl gate, not the little thing you have in your fingers, as wonderful as that is, ladies. This is going to be a single pearl gate that people come in and out of, and they travel through these gates, and they walk to and fro. Bottom of page 5, the walls of the city have 12 foundation stones, the names of the 12 apostles, and the gates, as we said, were named aptly for the 12 tribes. So you have 12 tribes of Israel, and you have the 12 apostles, and so the implication is here that the church in Israel will be brought together into the city of God. So you've got the one people of God brought together into this one capital city. Okay. Now, what about the dimensions of this city? Top of page 6, if you turn the page, I know you can't see the lines on that map very well, but John tells us here that it's a perfectly symmetrical cube. So this city is 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles long, and 1,500 miles high. So this is a massive city. Okay, so if you put one corner of the city in Los Angeles, and a second corner in Mexico City, and a third corner in St. Louis, the final corner would be on Edmonton, Alberta. And that's 1,500 miles square, roughly. And so this is a massive place. I put some numbers there below. That's about 2 million square miles, which is about 14 states of California put together, or almost 5,000 cities of Los Angeles. This is a massive place. And to put it into comparison, Kent County is about 850 square miles and has about 622,000 people. The city of Grand Rapids is 45 square miles and has about 190,000 people within the city. The population density of about 4,200 people per square mile. That means if the heavenly city were populated with the same population density as Grand Rapids, it could house 6.35 billion people. And that's just the square footage. That's not the cube. That's not the volume. That's not going up 1,500 miles. And I punched that number in my computer or my calculator, and I got E. It just said E. So if you include the height and calculate the same population density as Grand Rapids, the city of God will be able to accommodate. Actually, it wasn't. It was about 10 trillion. So, you know, we're just speculating here. But the point is, this is a massive place. This is a massive city. And this is the capital city of heaven itself. Okay. Any thoughts on that? I mean, it's just more than our minds can fully.
But 144,000, man, that's way long.
Well, that's the Jews during the tribulation, right? Those are the Jews that are sealed during the tribulation.
Well, there's a certain group that says that's all there's going to be.
All right. Yeah, there's more than, yeah, there's way room for more than that.
Think about the verse about the narrow path and few there be that find it. And then it's like, Well, there's really going to be a lot of people.
There's going to be a lot of people there. But still, comparison though, I mean, how long, the world's been around for 6,000 years. How many billions and billions of people haven't come and gone through this world, this life? And really, there's only going to be, in comparison, a small number of believers in eternity. Gay, were you going to say something?
No, I was describing the cube.
Oh, the cube. Gotcha.
Do you think there's any significance that they're just mentioned the street singular is gold, just one gold street?
Maybe the rest are dirt? I don't know.
One main street of gold? Or
it must be the main street through heaven, yeah.
With no potholes.
No potholes. That'll be heaven for us Michiganders, won't it? Yeah. Who? Oh, okay. So, I mean, this is clearly a massive place. You will have no problem finding a place in heaven, right? So, this is, you know, when Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. It's not in my Father's houses. That this is one structure, and this is the structure here where believers...
I like that version.
Yeah, it's in my Father's house, singular. It's not plural word. So he describes the beauty of it. Bottom of page 6, it lacks some wonderful things. That's kind of strange to say it that way, but it lacks some wonderful things. There's no temple. Revelation 21:22 says there's no temple, for God the Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. So there's no place that you go. There's no structure. There's no temple. There's no church building you go to, because God is there. He's present, omnipresent, and we will worship him wherever we are in fullness. So we don't need to go to a place to worship him, much like we don't now in the church. We don't need to go to a church building to do that, but that'll even be more realistic in heaven. So there's no temple. There's no need for the sun. We talked about that with Shiloh's question. Some think that means that there's no light source, like no sun or moon, but it just says that there's no need for it. So most likely the glory of God will illuminate heaven. There's no threats to security. It says in Revelation 21:25-27 that the gates will never be closed, and they will bring their glory and the honor of the nations into it. There's nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So there's no threats to security here. You don't need to worry about locking things, because the gates will never be shut anyway. There's no needs. We talked about the river of life, Revelation 22, clear as crystal, coming down from the throne of God, and a tree of life bearing 12 kinds of fruit. So there's no needs here. You're going to drink freely. You're going to eat freely. There's going to be all your needs satisfied. And perhaps the best, there's no curse. Revelation 22, verse 3, there shall no longer be any curse, and the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his bondservants shall serve him. So the curse is reversed. Everything that was cursed in this life is removed and done away with. So this is our home. This is our eternal home. And if you're like me, I love being home. I'd love much rather be at home than in another country. I love being home with my family and my kids and in the comfort of my own home. And that's what heaven will be like for us as Christians. And that's why we should anticipate it and look forward to it, because that's our eternal home. Okay, Wendy?
I'm just trying to envision what we have with this iteration with regard to the new heavens and the new earth. Well, the new earth is different than the new city that you just described, where there's all these mansions, you know, in my brother's house, or many mansions. So we all are going to have our own place that we live, but it sounds like it's going to be on this city. Well, then if there's this new heavens and new earth, what's the earth part? You know, what are we going to do with that earth if we're living on the city, or aren't we going to live on the city? Is the mansion's on the earth?
That's where Todd's going camping.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I'll be driving my pop-up camper. I mean, I don't know entirely.
But there is a separate earth from this Jerusalem satellite city that comes down out of heaven?
It's on the earth.
So the city comes down out of heaven and it lands on the new earth and
correct.
It stays there forever?
Correct.
Okay, because I was really getting confused, to be honest.
Yeah, we're on the earth. And it's hard to know here, but we have to assume that there's other places on the earth. He talks about other nations that come in and out of the heavenly city. So if that's the case, they have to live somewhere. They have to be outside the heavenly city. So there must be population centers outside the heavenly city. There must be people living in some sense outside, or maybe they're visiting. It's hard to know, but I don't think we're just contained in the heavenly city. We're going to be able to freely roam the earth and see the beauty of the earth. And you look puzzled.
Other nations are coming to come and visit. That's really cool.
That's what it says.
Like, are these people Christians that are from these other nations, and why aren't they part of the whole crew?
Ask Dale. kidding. I mean, what? 21:24, and the nations shall walk by its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it. Verse 26, and they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. So there has to be believers.
But everyone's believers.
Everyone's believers.
Yeah, the next verse says that these people coming in and out says, and nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's
book. Only believers.
So apparently we're going to be separated, but under different kings?
Perhaps.
The tree of life, too, the leaves of the tree of life are for the healing of the nations. What's that all about?
Right.
Oh, come on.
Ask you.
Yeah. So I think this gets to your point. There are things here that we can't fathom. No eye has seen, no ear has heard. That there are things here that we will never comprehend, but we know that it's a beautiful, wonderful, glorious place, and presumably primarily because of who's there. So I got to let you go.
If it doesn't pan out that way, you know, it won't bother us when we're there.